Hey, everybody. I'm Lincoln. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
My sobriety date is July 21st, 2003. I have a sponsor other guys in Alcoholics Anonymous, service position, home group, and all those things are very important to helping me stay sober. All those things help me to maintain a relationship with a power that's greater than me that I definitely depend on to stay sober day to time. And I'm grateful. Sam, thank you for asking me to come up and tell my story tonight. I've been here before. It's been a while, and it's good to be back. We've got a good relationship with this meeting, and some of the circles that I travel in have we swapped some speakers back and forth, and I've had the pleasure of hearing several of your members speak in my area, and so I'm happy to be here. Happy to do anything for Alcoholics Anonymous, and if I live locally, and if Sam or Billy or somebody was able to see me in my normal life, maybe you wouldn't ask me to come up here and speak. You know, you'd see me at work complaining about how I'm not appreciated or something like that, and you'd think, okay, maybe we'll find another speaker Sunday night. You know, but I'm a lot better. That's a fact. You know, I'm not. What do they say? I'm not the man that I used to be. I'm not the man I like. Whatever. There's some phrase there. You know, I've gotten a lot better, but I got a long way to go. Is basically the gist of it. You know, everything I really know about how to live today comes from this program. You know, I had a whole lot of ideas about what I thought AA was before I got here. And fortunately, I've been wrong about most of them, you know. And, you know, it started out for me because I grew up in a house where my mom was sober in AA. And, you know, so she was taking me to meetings from, you know, real early age, my brother and me. It was just the three of us growing up. And we bounced around a little bit. I grew up in Williamsburg, Virginia. Had some time in Connecticut, a couple trips back and forth. But she was getting sober around the time, I guess I was probably three or four. And, so really growing up, I was, I guess you could say, around AA, right? You know, so my brother and I got into shoplifting. You know, we were probably second, third grade, and we had a whole system. We had this whole thing going on with us and a couple of the other guys in the neighborhood, and we were robbing some of these hardware stores just blind. I mean, like taking fishing poles and all kinds of sporting goods and everything, and you know, then going over here and ripping off candy and all this stuff, and got to the point where there's a state trooper at our door, you know, one morning, you know, and he, you know, speaks to my mom and lets her know that, you know, we've been going around all over town stealing stuff. This was, you know, clearly way before drink one. You know, I'm a liar, a cheat, and a thief before my first drink, but. You know, what she had us do was go around and make amends to all these people, you know. And so I made my amends before my first drink, too. Definitely before my first meeting, but certainly before my first drink. And anyway, you know, some of that's tongue-in-cheek, but, you know, the fact remained is that, you know, over the years growing up, you know, of course I get to, like, adolescent years and see some friends starting to drink. You know, I grew up with the message that, you know, you're going to probably see some of your friends drink. You may have a problem with it, you know. And I knew enough about AA that I knew what it, I knew what it was. And it was very different back then. That's a fact too, man. I remember some of those meetings. You know, we would just play under the tables, which was like the only, you know, the only safe place to be, because it was like stop, drop, and roll Smokey in there. Like, I mean, thick layer of, I mean, you could visibly see the divide between the cigarette smoke in the meetings back then, and you know, all that kind of played into this idea I had about what AA was, and you know, these warnings from my mom that, you know, she would say things like, you know, you might get invited to some parties, and that's fine, and you go, and you just tell those people, you know, you can just have a Coke, you don't need to drink, you know. And I was probably like 13 or something, you know, and I just think, you are crazy. Like, there's just no way. Like, I had never had a drink of alcohol, and I still knew she was wrong. I mean, there's no way you could go to a party and just drink a Coke, you know. And, you know, enough time goes by. I think I always think about the line in Bill's story that said, you know, something like, fear kept him sober. Fear sobered me for a bit. And he talks about the warnings of his family or friends. And so I identify with that. And I think fear kept me away from my first drink for a while. And curiosity, you know, got me to it. And at some point, you know, a bunch of us got together and, you know, took, I guess, a couple beers from somebody's garage or something like that. And had a couple drinks. And, you know, the sky didn't fall. I didn't get arrested. And, you know, it wasn't that bad. And it just, all of a sudden, it told me that, okay, she's wrong. She was wrong. All that warning and all this fuss she's making about alcohol, she's wrong about that. Like, this is actually good, you know. And I started looking out for, the fear was gone. So then at any opportunity I had to drink, I took it, you know, fearlessly. And, you know, over the course of many years, you know, I would get to a point where I just became willing to pay a price every time I drank, you know. Wasn't just that I was fearless, but it just didn't matter. It got to a point where I knew that alcohol was doing, well, I didn't know it, but, you know, hindsight, I know it now, that alcohol was doing something for me that I couldn't do for me. And I'd be willing to pay any price for that, you know. But didn't start off like that. It took, you know, a good while of just drinking with friends and house parties and fake IDs and going to the bars and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I started having little consequences here and there, but nothing that I couldn't laugh off as just kind of a funny story. Most of the people that I drank with at that time, and I'm talking about, you know, high school, you know, maybe a year or so after high school, the people I drank with at that time, we were all drinking the same way. So, you know, I grew up in a house that had no drinking, and then I started drinking with these folks, and we all kind of drank the same way. So I don't see anything wrong with it, you know. So if I, you know, put the car in a ditch one night and wet the bed and, you know, yell at my girlfriend or whatever, I don't see anything wrong with that. I'm just, you know, we're just partying, you know. And that kind of stuff was happening. You know, I got in a pretty bad fight with my girlfriend one night and, you know, stormed off from this party, just tore up drunk. And I didn't make it very far out of this neighborhood before it hit somebody's mailbox. And this is in Williamsburg, Virginia, which may or may not have been there, but it's pretty small. And, you know, within minutes, every county of flavor of cop car was there, and the fire department was there, and the, I mean, it was like, you know, you'd think some kind of terrorism event had happened or something. But anyway, so I'm in the car. A buddy of mine had hopped in the car with me, and the whole time he was just, you know, just pleading with me, like, just pull over, don't do it, just don't drive, just pull over, come on, you know, and just shaking me. And I wrecked, and he hops out, and I think, okay, good. So I hop into the passenger seat. I'm thinking he's going to come around any minute and drive us the heck out of there, and we're going to be safe. And I wait, and I'm waiting, and I realize he's gone. He just took off. You know, he's like smart. He just got, he left the scene. And the cops show up, and they see me in the passenger seat, and they're asking me who was driving. And I was hammered, you know. They gave me a breathalyzer, and they you know, it didn't take them too long to figure out what had happened. Anyway, I go to court. I have a lawyer. Lawyer basically says, well, you can't prove that he was drunk when he was driving. You weren't there when he had the accident. You can't prove that he was actually drunk when he was driving. And it gets thrown out. And what that does for a guy like me is basically tells me that, well, that basically just didn't even happen, you know. I mean, I essentially did not get a DUI that night, you know. And, you know, which that's true, right? But there's a part of me, too, it's almost like there's always this duality of, you know, well, if anybody's read it, you know, in Step 5, it starts off talking about, you know, we live this life and, you know, there's the part of it that we want our friends to see. And then there's this inward reality that we know is true, that we hope never sees the light of day. So that, you know, very much is how I was living. And, you know, so I could, in one hand, you know, feel like, well, the case gets thrown out of court, is no problem. But deep down, I'm thinking, man, I wonder if there's something wrong here, you know, and maybe my mom was right, you know, or the things like that are starting to enter into my consciousness, you know, and lots of stuff, you know, lots of different stories, you know. I go off to college and have different experiences there. It didn't take me long to find a group of folks. We hear this all the time, you know, that drank like me, started getting into some trouble at school. I remember this experience where I was studying music ed, and we went off to a conference. And again, you know, thinking about that duality, like there's part of me that I love what I'm studying. I want to be respected. But then there's also, you know, my drinking, basically, which at the time, what I know about my drinking is I'm starting to notice that, you know, when I start drinking, I'm not so much able to tell you what's going to happen anymore, you know. When I was in high school, it never really mattered because, you know, we're all underage. You're not supposed to be doing it anyway, and you just drink like crazy and hope you don't get caught. If you don't get caught, you're good, you know. Get a little older, and it's like, okay, it's a different dynamic now, you know, because I'm, you know, starting to get prepared to be a professional. I'm, you know, a little bit more concerned about my reputation with some people that I actually respect, things like this. And I'm realizing that when I start drinking, it might be fine, or, you know, I might have, you know, I might say something to the wrong person, or I might just lose control. You know, more than likely what would happen would be, you know, I'd tell myself I'm just going to have a few, and then I would just kind of keep changing my mind, you know. So-and-so's here. I haven't seen that person in a long time. Let me just get a couple more. And next thing you know, I'm the one that's orchestrating the after party, you know. And then the whole next day, I'm kicking myself. Like, how did that happen again? I'm definitely not going to do that again today, you know. That was this cycle that was happening. And anyway, this conference I went to, you know, I remember being, on one hand, a little bit relieved that some of the people that I was going with drank, you know, because they looked like a bunch of kind of goody two-shoes, you know, to me, and a bunch of geeks, losers, and all that, you know, and like find out they're actually going to drink. I'm like, okay, we might actually have a little fun, you know, and we go down to the bar, and they drink one or two, and they start complaining about feeling it and things like that, getting a little nervous, and people start looking at their watches and talking about what they have to do tomorrow. I mean, I'm basically panicking at this point. I hear you talking about that stuff, and I'm getting nervous. Like, you people are about to leave. And I'm just at a point where, like, I know I've got work to do here now, you know. And so I have to kind of find a way to hide it. And I'm there. I'm out of town in a hotel room with a bunch of people that I've had classes with, and I kind of know, but, you know, I don't really know them. And, you know, I go back to my room. I stay at the bar. I drink enough that I'm, you know, pretty drunk. Drunk enough, you know, that I can still function and whatnot. But, you know, definitely not like, you know, I'm not tipsy, like them with two drinks or whatever. And I go back to the room, and all the people I'm sharing this room with are asleep, getting ready for their next day of lectures and all this stuff. And I'm in the corner, cracking beers, just hoping they don't hear, you know, drinking, you know, trying to keep the lights dim and back and forth to the toilet, you know. And then the next day, you know, I feel like this big. And they're all bright-eyed and, you know, jumping off to the next event and everything. And I'm filled with all this guilt and shame and remorse and hoping that nobody knows what I actually did last night. And they're questioned. They see all these empty beer cans in the trash. And, where did all that come from? And, I mean, that's just one night. You know, that's the kind of stuff. That's kind of how I was living, you know, and that stuff goes on for a while. And, I don't know why my last drink was my last drink. I had been lying to a lot of people. I'd been really comfortable making excuses and lying to people. And I heard someone else say this, and I always identified with it, that they had just kind of run out of lies, and that just made a lot of sense to me. You know, I had some friends in from out of town to see me, and we got started. We had a keg in the backyard where I was living, having a little Friday night party, and I'm pretty sure it's not my fault, because this girl was talking to me, and she just would not stop talking. She just was talking to me, And I was trying to refill my beer at the keg, and from a distance, I just heard this keg just go belly up. I'm like in a panic, because she's kind of had me cornered over here this whole time, and I just got started drinking, and now the keg is empty, you know? And it's like 12:01 or something, and I can't go buy more beer. And that's a problem. It's Friday night, you know? And so I'm looking for that, you know, in Richmond, there's an after-hours club, so I just go AWOL, man. I just take off by myself. I leave the party. I leave everybody. Go down to this club, and whatever. You get the idea. Two, three days later, I kind of resurface, and I've been just rolling for days. You know, people worried about me, wondering where I am, if I'm alive or dead. And I didn't plan that. I planned to spend this weekend with these friends, real friends of mine that were in town to see me. And but because something like that, like I ran out of beer, that's all that happened. I ran out of beer, and next thing you know, I'm gone for days. And I come back in, tail between my legs, and all of them just kind of like looking at me with that look of like a combination of confusion and disgust and just, you know, what is wrong with you? That look, you know, it's like I said, like I just said, run out of lies. I didn't have any story. I mean, and you know, most of you can probably understand. I've been in that situation many times. That wasn't a first, and it wasn't because that situation was so special that I ran out of lies. I have made up stories about being kidnapped and held at gunpoint and, you know, alien abduction. I mean, it wasn't my fault, you know? And so I was very versed at getting myself out of those kinds of situations, but this time was just different. I had nothing really to say. And I just kind of shrugged and had to kind of live with that humiliation. You know, I guess the only thing I had going for me probably at the time was, like I said before, is that I did know about AA. I know what it is. I knew what it was, whatever, how you want to put it. You know, not just because my mom had been sober in AA, but about 3 months or so before that, my brother, who's a real alcoholic. I mean, I had a drinking problem. This guy. Tell his story a little bit, and I probably will a little bit. All right, so we're very different in the way that we drank. Okay, you know, Eric, he was kind of like the motor skills were kind of the first to go. And I mean, I'm a bedwetting, you know, fall down, getting scrapes kind of drunk. Don't get me wrong. But Eric, man, like he would, holy crap, it would be just awesome. He would come over and be bleeding and holes in his pants. And, you know, he would tell me stories about having two mattresses in his place because he'd pee on one night and go over and pee on the, just rotate back and forth. And, so, you know, we have this thing. And anyway, the whole time I'm drinking, I look at him, I'm like, you really, you know, Eric, you got a problem. You need to do something about this. Well, he does, you know. And then all of a sudden, I don't have anybody to kind of hide behind. You know, the light is on me now, and I can't point the finger at this other guy who's worse than me. And but in this three-month period, I'm noticing something in him. You know, he's different. I noticed a lot of the outside stuff with him first. He was also, you know, really thin. And just kind of looked like malnourished and everything. And he just, you know, he started looking better. He had some new clothes, and he got his license and got a car. I was still taking taxis places drunk, and some of the taxi drivers were like, "Where's brother at?" You know, they knew him by name, and like, "He stopped drinking." They're like, "Oh, damn!" You know, like they probably hurt their business. They're disappointed to hear that, probably. But I was seeing that, you know, he was sounding better. It's like you see somebody get sober, and it's hard to put it in words sometimes, but you just kind of know that something is different there, you know. Well, you know, Bill talked about it when Abby came to see him. He saw that light in him, and I think that's what I was seeing in my brother. And so that morning, you know, some of the that weekend and the friends and all that. That next day, I called my brother up and I just said, hey, you know, I think I need to do something. I think I need some help, man. You know, and so he just came on over, and for all of the times I'd see my mom go to meetings, all the times I'd see my mom pick up a chip, or I'd gone to meetings with her or whatever, I'd certainly never read the big book. You know, I didn't know anything about the chapter working with others. And you know, frankly, he probably didn't either. He had about 3 months sober, you know, but he somehow, intuitively, he came over and did basically what it says in our book to do. He came over and he talked to me about his drinking, you know, and that I'd had plenty of people talk to me about my drinking and ask me what I was going to do about my drinking, you know, and point the finger and all that, you know, we all know about that kind of stuff. Well, he came over and just started talking about his drinking, which, you know, that sets up a completely different dynamic in that conversation. I knew about his drinking, too. We drank together, you know. But there was something about that that was just really different. And it made it possible for me to talk about my drinking in a much more honest kind of way. And we didn't, you know, it wasn't like we had to figure anything out, crack the code or anything. But it was simply, you know, in that moment, just one alcoholic talking to another, you know, and there was some identification happening there. And I think he just said, well, hey, why don't you come to a meeting with me? You know, I said, all right. And we did. And we started going to a couple meetings together. That first meeting, though, I mean, I came home and I was so excited. I mean, and none of this stuff is mine. Like everything I have heard or know, it's all stuff I've heard from other speakers or sponsors or whatever. But this too, I really relate to, is that in that first meeting, I had that feeling of that I was just doing the right thing, and it had been a long time since I had done the right thing, and it felt good. And it was so simple, you know. I had known what the right thing was and not done it and felt horrible. You know, I had been a blackout drinker and, you know, had to get really good at telling lies on my feet and making excuses and living in shame and bewilderment, not knowing what really happened and all that. And here's a moment that I went to a meeting and listened to a bunch of other people talk about their drinking, and somehow in my gut I knew I was doing the right thing and it felt good. And that was it. And I went again, you know. I went to another meeting, and I went to another. You know, I just started going to some meetings. And but I was really excited to be able to pick up the phone and call my mom and say, you know, hey, went to a meeting. You know, I'm trying to do something about my drinking. And she said, why don't you try going 90 to 90? You know, I'm like, what the hell is 90 to 90? You know, I don't know any of this stuff. And my brother was a lot more weird about it. He'd say, like, hey, man, call me up. Well, he would leave me these ridiculous voicemails. You know, I'd get a voicemail. This was before, well, his cell phones were just starting to come out, but I had an answer machine in the house. And I'd come home and I'd, you know, push the machine. And I'd just be a message, don't drink. You know, that'd be it. And he'd call me up and be like, hey, man, let's go get a little early morning serenity. You know, I'd be like, what the hell is he talking about? You know, so I'm going to this meeting called early morning serenity. I'm like, I don't even know who this person is anymore, you know? And it was weird. But we just started going to some meetings and you know, man, I guess like duality seems to be the theme tonight, you know, because it's like, I did feel good, but on the other, like the flip side of that coin was that it felt weird. It was so weird and scary. You know, I mean, I knew kind of I needed to do something about my drinking, but I mean, it felt like I might as well just be naked or something, you know, or like it really even felt like dramatic, like I was letting go of my best friend, you know, like the drinking, you know, alcohol did something for me, you know, and now I got to give that up. And that, it was just, you know, just as hard in that way as it was, you know, that really sincere feeling of doing something right, you know. Anyway, the people in AA were just totally weird and crazy, creepy, you know. They come up to you like, hey, how's it going? How you doing? What's your name? What's your phone number? You know, let's go get some coffee. Let's go get, you know, that's all anybody ever wanted to do is just come up and let's go get some coffee after the meeting. And they're like, no, I'm not. I just want to do something about my drinking. You know, I'm not trying to join a cult. Or I'm not. It was just a lot, you know, all at once. And but, you know, whatever. It just kind of, those things have a way of kind of working out. I joined a home group and got a job making coffee in that group. And that's where some things started happening because they just, you know, people just kept asking me, hey, we're going over to Jim's house, or hey, we're going to go do this, or hey, and finally I just said, all right, mm-hmm. You know, just said yes. And I had no idea what a profound thing that was, to just say yes, you know. I mean, you know, you could look at my life and it wouldn't take you, you wouldn't, you know, need to really analyze it to tell that I wasn't doing a great job of managing it. You know, my mode of transportation was my girlfriend's pink 3-speed bicycle. I didn't, you know, I was about to get evicted, you know, I may or may not have had a job, et cetera, et cetera. And, but I was still holding on to the belief that I'm the best one to run the show here, you know. And in that moment with the home group and those people saying, hey, let's go on over to, you know, Jim's house. And for me to just say yes is like this very first time I kind of let go of the reins, just let go and let somebody else have a shot at it, you know. And I went to the party and it was awful. I mean, it was just it was weird. I mean, I was at this party and people were drinking Cokes and, you know, some guys in the corner playing his acoustic guitar and just like, this sucks, man. You know, like, is this my life now? And, I mean, God, I love it when newcomers ask me that now, like, well, what do you do for fun? I'm like, what do you do for fun? You know, I mean, like, anyway, yeah, we could talk about that. But anyway, so, and I always think about Animal House, man. If anybody's ever seen Animal House, where John Belushi's coming down the stairs and there's that guy saying, you know, give my love, whatever. He just takes that guitar and smacks. That's how I felt at that party, you know. And I was kind of ready to get out of there. And I finally made up some, you know, excuse about being busy or whatever, and I'd go on home. And, but what happened was, like, later that night or the next day, somewhere, I realized the whole time I was there, I mean, it sucked, but the whole time I was there, I didn't think about drinking once. And it had been a long time since I hadn't thought about drinking, you know? that got my attention. And little things like that happened to me, you know. As I was going to meetings and as I was saying yes and getting a home group and just kind of becoming a part of what you people were doing, little things started happening to get my attention, and I just kept doing it, you know. And, you know, what? From there, yeah, I get a sponsor, start working through the steps, you know, and my first experience through the steps is probably, you know, a good example of, you know, I learned I don't need to really do this thing perfectly. I don't need to understand God to do the steps. I just need to be honest, open-minded, and willing, you know. And so I did. I went through the steps with my first sponsor. And I guess it was right around like 9 months or something like that. I remember pulling one of, you know, my home group members aside and talking to him, like, you know, when does the desire to drink go away? Like, when does it go away? I was still thinking about drinking, and you know, little things I was doing, like I mentioned, were helping, but I was still thinking about it a lot, and I'd get kind of depressed. And I remember driving down the road in Richmond, Robinson Street. There's a lot of bars along Robinson Street and outdoor cafes. I remember driving down that road one day and seeing everybody drinking. I just started crying. I was bawling. Driving down the road, just bawling because I couldn't be out there drinking, you know, with everybody. And I'm like 9 months sober. Like, what's going on here, you know? And so I asked this guy, like, when does it go away? When did it go away for you? And, you know, he's like, well, you know, I can't tell you when it's going to go away for you. You know, I can tell you what I did, you know. And he was asking me, like, where are you in the steps? And I was just about to start making amends. And sure enough, I started making some amends, and kind of similar to that party. Like, I didn't notice it. It was more, you know, at some point I looked back and thought, wow, I haven't thought about drinking in probably a month or something, you know. And these windows of time just seemed to kind of get longer and longer, and I was getting a reprieve, basically, you know, getting that daily reprieve. But starting to get a little taste of some freedom, you know. And I think early on I would have settled for that, you know. I think that's probably all I wanted when I first came to AA, was to be able to not drink and to not want to drink, you know, because I thought that's what it was. I thought I was going to go to AA and probably not drink, but want to drink the whole time, you know. And I thought that's probably what life was going to be like. And all I really wanted was to be able to not drink and not want to drink. And then that happened. And little did I know was that was really just kind of the starting line. You know, that was just kind of what was required for me to really start doing some work to take a look at what's going on with me in here, you know. And so much of the stuff being kind of an inside job, and realizing that, man, I got a whole lot of stuff going on with me that I had no idea, you know. A lot of it kind of, you know, around the idea of running the show and self-reliance and selfishness, you know, fears. You know, I'd say, well, I wasn't that afraid of things when I was drinking. Well, no crap. It's hammered. I'm not scared of anything. I, you know, stand up on top of a moving car. I'm not afraid of anything, you know. But I'm sober, and I'm scared of everything, you know, everything. And that's a problem. And yeah, so that's it. So I'm there. I'm at the starting point now, you know, get through the steps. And, you know, I start to develop this, dependence, but that's not even right, or even like a concept of a higher power. I don't know. I think it's just probably more that first time through the steps was probably just more having a willingness to believe that there is something else, you know, other than me. I mean, I didn't grow up in the church, so I didn't have like any kind of faith to return to or any beliefs to undo. And I believe that there was probably something out there, you know, that kind of makes all of this go around. But the idea of asking for help from that, and that it was going to actually change me and do something to me, I mean, that seemed kind of like magic or something. Like you're basically asking me to believe in sorcery or something, that this God is going to change me, you know, and take away this desire to drink. And that was kind of hard, you know. The more surprising thing down the road was learning, not that I had even really a problem in believing in God or believing that God could do things for me that I couldn't do for me, but was undoing this kind of fixed idea that actually I am God, you know, right? That was the problem. And I don't mean literally, obviously. I didn't go around like, you know, I'm God. But when you would look at my actions and the way I would talk to you or the way I'd run my life or, you know, the way that I saw what I should be getting and, you know, and the way I should be treated, you know, or knowing exactly what you should be doing and what you should not be doing and all that, like that level of self-centeredness, you know, kind of points to somebody who, you know, you're running the show like that. You might think, you know, you're a pretty powerful guy, right? And so there's a lot of those kinds of ideas and stuff that, you know, I've had to let go of, and not through any kind of like deep spiritual seeking, but pain. Like it just, that stuff stops working. And, you know, you get beat up and beat up and beat up. And I get beat up, right? And have to say, all right, once again, I got to look for another way to do this. And I hope that's not coming out kind of cryptic, you know. I certainly don't mean it to be like that. But, you know, it's stuff that can, well, that actually kind of reminds me of one part of my sobriety was that's kind of where I was, really, was in this kind of intellectualizing AA and getting really into like AA theory and, you know, talking about a lot of spiritual things. But my life basically looked like it did when I first got here. I mean, like it was a freaking train wreck, but I was sober. You couldn't blame it on alcohol anymore. Now it's just like, you know, all you can see are these like serious character defects that are just running wild. I've been dating and living with this girl who'd had enough, you know, and she's like, later. And, you know, no job, no car, no money. I mean, I don't remember all the, you know, circumstances, but that was like 4 years sober. And it's coming apart. You know, because I was just talking about AA a lot, you know, but I wasn't really taking the actions of AA. And, you know, something about talking about AA can get really complicated, and the actions of AA are really simple. You know, that's been my experience, you know, is, you know, different sponsors have had a way at kind of corralling my crazy mind into some very simple things to do here, you know, and then try to get me away from what my brain wants to do is to figure out what is going on here. And, you know, the actions that I've been told to do are simple. You know, it's what we're doing here tonight. You know, go to a meeting and, you know, stick your hand out, ask how people are doing, stuff like that. You know, I'm not going to list everything. We know what we're talking about here, you know, but very simple actions. You know, I was at a point where bounced around a little bit, but I don't know, a couple of years sober and really depressed and full of self-pity and delusional because I couldn't see it, you know. I didn't think that I was full of self-pity. I mean, it was either my girlfriend had cheated on me or something like that. There was like, it was enough that I could kind of be justified. Well, you would be upset too. You know, like this hurts and I'm sad, you know, and my, you know, my brother came over at one point and was like, why don't you, like, you want to, maybe we should work with some newcomers. And I said, man. Yeah. I would. I think that's a good idea. I think working with newcomers is important, you know. But it's just that right now I'm really sad, and I don't know that I'm going to be able to do that. You know, I'm just way too sad to help anybody. But when I feel better, I will. I'll be the first one at the meeting, and I'll pick them up, take them, you know, give them rides and stuff. It'll be great. I promise, you know. And I didn't realize what was going on there was that I much like this kind of intellectualizing AA, talking about AA, you know, the AA theory and all that kind of crap. Because I probably would have then sat there and talked to Eric about, you know, very important deep things that God was doing for me in my life, you know, while I sat there sad and unwilling to help anybody. But so I'm sitting there basically, you know, thinking that I'm going to get well and then take the steps instead of taking the steps to get well. You know, and that's what I've had to learn over time is, you know, these simple actions, I have to do them first. You know, I have to do them whether I think it's going to help me. I have to do it whether I feel like doing it or not, whether it's convenient or not. And I don't do that all the time. I don't do it perfectly. I'm not, I don't get that impression, you know. That would not be honest. you know, I got to do it when I'm convinced it's not going to work because I'm just like really smart again. Like, what's that going to do? You know, I got one time my car broke down and I called my sponsor and I was telling him my whole plan of what I was going to do. I was going to not pay any of my bills and put all of that money towards getting my car back because I was so tired of taking the bus to work every day. And it was embarrassing. You know, I was like 5 or 6 years sober and I'm taking the bus to work. Like, come on, what are people going to think? I mean, all that kind of stuff. And so I'm just going to not pay my landlord, not going to pay my power, I'm not going to pay any of it. I'm just going to get my car out of the shop. He's like, no, you're going to take the bus. You're going to pay your bills, you take the bus, and, you know, you save up, or you take your car in the shop when you can afford to do it. And, I mean, I'm talking like that is some pretty simple kind of, I guess that's pretty simple kind of stuff, life lessons. Or that shouldn't have to be a life lesson, you know. It's like, and that's how I run my life all the time. It's like I do very average things and expect to be rewarded for it, you know. Like that's where I am now, you know. Like, and I was talking to my sponsor on the way up here how I just like to keep score, you know. And like, I haven't done the dishes 3 times today. You know, it's a lot more than you have. And yeah, I mean, like, that's kind of like ridiculous and petty, but like, that's the kind of stuff that starts chipping away. You know, like these, you know, life lessons or whatever I'm talking about here, you know, like the idea of like, I've heard people talk about alcoholics where like, you know, like, I paid all my bills on time and I expect like someone to throw me a parade, you know, and, you know, but it is like that little stuff, man, that I've got to be really careful about because that's what starts to separate me from you and it starts to separate me from my higher power, you know. And, you know, I guess a little bit, you know, about that is it seems like it has just changed a lot. My higher power, right? Like, I can't say, like, it's this. Or I don't even know. I mean, I went through a long period where, like, it started out and was, like, the heavens and all, you know, things kind of like in that realm. And then it really just got down to, like, you know what? I think AA is my higher power. You know, I think that's where I am. I just think I believe that, you know, you people are more powerful than me. And that worked for a long while. And a lot of times you see people that start there and then go, and I kind of went backwards there, and now it's kind of shifted again a little bit. But all I know, man, is that I am not it, and I cannot be it, you know. And I've had times where I've kind of sponsored myself, and that's been scary and weird. And and so now I know that, like, I am responsible for my own sobriety. I've got to do the things that I've got to do to stay stay well, right? So I've got to maintain some kind of connection or relationship with whatever that power is that is somehow lessened. The more I try to define it and talk about it, it just seems to get smaller and smaller. And I get bigger and bigger, you know. And all I know is I need to ask for help. And that's the simplest way that I know how to do it. And I read some different, I read this book, you know, our text, and I have some other things that I read. But I just try to, I say some, you know, real simple prayers that all that kind of like just comes back to, I'm asking for help because I know that I can't, there's things I can't do. And I know that I can't do them because I tried and it didn't work. And if I could, I wouldn't be here on Sunday night, right? You know, I'd be out there, you know, being powerful, you know, and fixing myself. And so, you know, I ask for help when I'm scared. You know, I ask God to remove my fears, you know, or ask God, you know, to direct my thinking. That's a big one. You know, just some little things like that. A lot of my prayers come from the book, and a lot of them are just real simple. And a lot of times I just try to get still and sit there and be quiet. And not like I'm trying to, like, hear any messages. God, man, whew, that would freak me out. And it'd probably be not real good for the rest of you know, society. If I start hearing messages, like, that would probably be great. But and I shouldn't be, like, all tongue-in-cheek, because I know a lot of people actually, you know, they do. They hear, like, they get guidance, and that's cool. It's just not been my experience. But what's been wild, actually, is I just started praying with my oldest son recently, and, man, that was a trip, you know. Like, I love my boys, like, oh, man, I don't even think I knew what love was until I had them. And so there's different parts of my day that are just like my favorite. And one of them, this sounds so weird, but it's like right before bed, Nate's my oldest, and, he always has to go potty right before bed. Well, that's not weird, but he just sits there, and it's like, for whatever reason, like right when he's sitting on the toilet and I'm just sitting there with him, we have like the most amazing little connections and talk. He just kind of opens up, you know, and he starts talking about all this really interesting stuff, and he's 3 and a half, but told you it was going to be weird. But I just love him. So, I mean, I'm just like fascinated by him, you know, so it's like, it makes sense to me. But we have these moments, man, and some of them I've like kind of videotaped, he'll say something, I'll try to catch it. But we started praying, right? So we started like, it started off just saying, telling him things like, you know, like, Nate, you know, God loves you. It's simple like that, you know. And then I'd say like, well, Nate, do you want to pray with me? Yeah. And he'd say, okay. And he just all of a sudden, I know, he just go, bam, he just said, clap him and lock him. and he started praying. And see, he's been going to this little preschool, right? And he's like, he's learned all this stuff, you know? And so he started praying. I was like, oh, okay. And so I let Nate pray the other night. And he, man, he just went through all this stuff. He's like, you know, God, it's Nate. Thank you for my parents. And thank you for my teachers. And he started going through all this stuff. And it just was like so sweet and innocent and just like simple. And I was like, right, man, yeah. It can be that, you know? I mean, I believe that it can be like that. It's simple and, anyway, that is about as much of a tangent as anybody deserves. I just thought it was like really sweet and cool, but I should probably wrap up on that. I don't know. I mean, I am really grateful to be here. One thing I didn't really probably talk very much about is working with others, and that, you know, I've been able to sponsor some guys, and that has been awesome too. And you know, probably the most important thing is probably similar to that time where I was sitting on the steps and I didn't want to help anybody else. Is what I've learned. Is that when I'm in real trouble, that is the thing that works for me. I will pray, and I believe that is important and probably helps more than I'm ever going to be aware. But man, working with another alcoholic works for me like nothing else does. There's something about that has been a really huge lesson for me to learn. And you know, when I first got sober, I'd gone through the steps pretty quick, and my sponsor said, all right, now we got step 12. He's like, you got 2 weeks. 2 weeks, and you need to have a sponsee. And I remember thinking, like, who in their right mind is going to want this guy, 4 or 5 months sober, to be their sponsor, you know? And he didn't budge. And And he's like, what am I going to do? He's like, just go to meetings and, you know, ask what their name is, shake their hand, and say, you know, have you been through the steps? And if you haven't, I can take you through the steps and offer to help. And so I did that. I argued a lot, but then I eventually did it. And next thing you know, I had like 3 sponsees. And that was a huge lesson too, because prior to that, you know, had felt like somehow once I get through the steps, I'm just going to, you know, be here and they'll come to me, you know, like a beacon, like they're going to find me. And it's not really how it's happened, you know. And I don't think that's how our history was. I don't think it was like that for them, you know. You know, I tell some people at work that I'm an alcoholic, and I keep my eye out, and I try to be helpful and put, you know, my hand out where I can. And when I'm at meetings, that's what I do too. And I try to come early and stay late. Some of those principles, you know, and that's where I have found people to connect with and work with. And not all of them have stayed sober, man. That has helped me more than anything else I can think of, you know, along with the other things that have helped. Very grateful to be here tonight. Thank you, guys. Have a good night.